Why read the classic cases? The purpose of the Penguin Liberty series is to encourage citizens to think for themselves about the meaning of freedom under our Constitution. So, why devote a volume to classic cases of the Supreme Court, given that they are often thought to be written by lawyers and judges for lawyers and judges? Indeed, legal training for law students entails reading judicial decisions as a means of preparing to enter the profession. In this volume, however, I present Supreme Court cases not as fodder for future lawyers, but as materials to be listened to, studied, and engaged with by citizens concerned with playing their part in our democracy. Each case plays a crucial role in a much-needed national conversation about the rights and liberties we owe to one another as members of the American polity. And they are edited to make them accessible to citizen listeners who cannot rely on legal professionals to interpret their rights for them. The opinions here are not meant as ready-made explanations of our liberties. Instead, they are documents to stimulate reflection. Supreme Court practice, as opposed to legislative decision-making, lends itself particularly well to that endeavor. This is because the Supreme Court does not simply vote like a legislature. It, by custom, explains its reasoning in opinions. Majority opinions, therefore, make transparent why the court has or has not protected free speech or religious liberty in a particular case. And its reasoning stands as something to be reflected on by citizens, criticized, or affirmed. And while majority opinions allow citizens to reflect on the past decisions of the court, the opinions by dissenting justices also play a crucial role in stimulating discussion about the meaning of the Constitution. These dissents show that the question of what liberties our Constitution protects is itself contested within the court. The dissents are often sharp disagreements with majority decisions about the meaning of our Constitution. The willingness of justices to dissent should also be an invitation for listeners to develop their own ideas of constitutional meaning, even when they run contrary to the majority opinions. My hope is that in listening to these cases and prominent dissents, citizens will be willing, when they find something wrong, to themselves dissent and speak out about the court's past wrongdoing. That willingness to be an active interpreter of the Constitution is fundamental to what I called in the series introduction following Isaiah Berlin, positive liberty, a willingness of citizens to actively engage themselves in demanding their liberties as participants in self-government, not being mere passive subjects of our institutions. I have emphasized the importance of citizen interpretation of the Constitution. But the Supreme Court has, not surprisingly, emphasized the centrality of its own interpretation, sometimes indicating that it has the final say about the meaning of the document and of our liberties. For instance, the reasoning of one classic case, Marbury v. Madison, 1803, emphasizes that since law is interpreted exclusively by judges, only judges should interpret the Constitution, because it is the supreme law. That view is bolstered by the structure of Article 3, which might be thought to grant exclusive power to judges on matters of law, even though it does not explicitly do so. Such a rigid understanding would leave little room for the kind of citizen interpretation I am urging. But is it correct?